This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noel Lim. 7:36 a.m. Monday, the 12th of April, which means that in about half an hour, we're going to be having the breakfast grill. Roshan, tell us what's happening today.
Yes, I'm particularly excited about this one. In recent years, we've seen protests and social movements all around the world, whether it's the protests in Bangkok, Hong Kong, or even the insurgency in the U.S. And while economists keep telling us that the human race is better than it's ever been on a macro level, on the ground, it feels like people are just getting progressively more stressed, anxious, and angry. And why is this? Well, Angrynomics by Mark Blyth and his co-author puts forward that the root cause of all this increased populism and polarization comes down to wealth and income inequality. And basically, it's all this anger that is boiled over with nowhere else to go. So I'll be speaking with Mark Blyth about what is the point where economics becomes Angrynomics, as well as how we fix the situation, if it is even possible at all. Should be a very interesting conversation.
That's going to be happening after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. Be sure to stay tuned for that. In the meantime, though, we're turning our attention to global tax, because for years, corporations have been shifting profits across jurisdictions, usually to Asia, with lower corporate tax rates to avoid paying high rates in their home countries. Now, the U.S. is putting its weight behind calls for imposing a global minimum corporate tax rate.
This is basically to discourage U.S. multinationals, the likes of Amazon, to move to tax havens or use loopholes to pay little or no tax. So such a move by the US would certainly help shore up its tax revenue to fund its massive budget. Now, we know this plan has been gaining support, particularly from members of the OECD countries like France and Italy that tend to have quite high tax rates. And so I think they have been calling for reforms to international taxes, which would end a race to the bottom. I think, years ago, Singapore was very concerned about this because there was some discussion about this matter. And this is something Malaysia definitely has to pay attention to, because it will affect our FDI inflows we've sent to further lose our cost competitive advantage.
So for more insight into this, joining us on the line is Thornton Matheson, Senior Fellow at the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Centre. Thornton, thanks so much for joining us today. So walk us through how a global minimum tax works in practice. For example, do governments around the world then still have the freedom to set their own corporate tax rates?
This is what the Biden administration has been negotiating with the OECD. Of course, they have been studying BEPS, base erosion and profit shifting. The current work is mostly on what's called Pillar 1 and Pillar 2. Pillar 1 is looking at how to tax the digital economy. And then there's Pillar 2, which is relevant to your question about global minimum taxes. Almost all countries have a corporate income tax that they apply to economic activity by corporations within their own territory. And then countries have two basic approaches. If they have multinational corporations that are headquartered in their own country, but also have foreign operations, countries have two basic approaches to how those foreign earnings are treated for tax purposes. The vast majority of countries have what's called a territorial system, where they do not tax those foreign earnings. There used to be more countries that, like the US currently, have the opposite system, which is called a worldwide system. They levy some sort of domestic tax on the foreign earnings of their multinationals. So what BEPS Pillar 2 would do is encourage more countries to introduce a global minimum tax, whereby they levy some minimal level of tax on the foreign earnings of their domestic multinational corporations, taking into account any taxes that they paid on those foreign earnings in the foreign countries where they earned it.
Now, the U.S. is proposing a global minimum tax rate of 21%, far above the 12.5% minimum tax discussed in OECD talks. Is this really feasible?
The Biden administration has proposed very thoroughgoing reform of the U.S. tax, which currently domestically has a 21% rate. And for the foreign minimum tax, so-called GILTI, the current rate is 10.5% to 13%, depending on foreign tax credit usage. So the Biden administration wants to put the domestic rate up to 28% from 21%. And it wants to increase the guilty rate from 10.5% to 21%. So the U.S. under the Biden plan, our foreign minimum tax rate would be 3/4 of our domestic rate. And if the outcome of the BEPS Pillar 2 negotiations is a single foreign minimum tax regime, then I do think it might be difficult to get other countries to adopt a 21% rate, if only because currently they're not taxing offshore income at all, most of them. The average OECD domestic corporate income tax rate is currently around 22 or 23%. So if they were to adopt a 21% rate, their offshore rate was almost as high as their onshore rate. And some of them might be reluctant to do that. They would certainly be likely to face a lot of lobbying pressure from their domestic corporate sector not to do that. That being said, it's not really clear that the BEPS Pillar 2 process will require uniform adoption of a single tax regime from all of its members. My understanding of the BEPS Pillar 2 process is participation is voluntary, and therefore it's likely that there will be significant variation of the global minimum tax regimes that are adopted by the countries that do adopt it. And all of them may not, in fact, adopt it.
This sounds potentially rather messy. What are other obstacles that stand in the way of implementing a floor on tax rates?
Aside from concerns about competitiveness and lobbying pressure from domestic multinational corporations, it's going to be, for many countries, a big challenge to administer. You know, one of the benefits of territoriality is that it's easier to administer. You don't have to worry about taxing your multinationals' offshore earnings. You do have to kind of protect your domestic tax base from their shifting income out of the country. But you don't have to deal with foreign tax credits, for example, which is when you're taxing the foreign earnings of your multinationals, you have to give them credit for taxes that they've already paid abroad. Otherwise, you know, you'd really be hammering them. And depending on exactly how you structure this global minimum tax, administering the foreign tax credit can be a very challenging thing to do, both for corporations, even if they're, you know, trying to be 100% compliant, and for national tax administrations to enforce it. That is a big obstacle.
Now, another challenge in international taxation has to do with levies on tech companies, how and where to tax them. Does a global minimum tax address this?
Speaking from a U.S. perspective, the proposed Biden reforms would likely increase taxes paid by U.S. Digital corporations on their offshore earnings simply by, you know, generally increasing the tax burden on those earnings. We've been talking mostly about BEPS Pillar 2, the global minimum tax, part of the OECD BEPS program that really focuses on digital taxation, however, is Pillar 1. The BEPS Pillar 1 approach is basically what's called formulary apportionment. It takes the global book profits of a particular corporation, makes various adjustments to them for tax purposes, and then takes a portion of those global book profits, and Pillar 1 would allocate it on the basis of sales. So that is the main OECD BEPS solution to taxing digital multinationals.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Thornton. That was Thornton Matheson of the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center, giving us a bit of insight into the discussion around the implementation of a global tax rate, a minimum global tax rate, and how that would affect individual countries and their policies on their own corporate taxes.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds going to sounds quite complex because it does involve quite a number of parties. So I can't see this happening so soon if it, you know, if by Biden successfully does manage to push this through. Certainly, I think companies will be lobbying quite intensively to push back on this policy. But, you know, at the end of the day, companies are very clever, tax agents too, and they will find ways to go around this either through transfer pricing or other mechanisms.
And just keep in mind also, the OECD is just a group of 37 countries, right? I mean, yes, they're big countries with a big portion of the global economy, but does this mean that maybe companies shift to other countries, which would be good for, I guess, the other countries in the region, right? Because Malaysia does territorial, basically taxes country that taxes money, revenue generated in the country. Wow, that word really put a number on me, did a number on me. But it is very complex, as Noel put it, right? And the administrative element is going to be a very difficult thing to get through. And the bigger question here is, what happens if Biden, the Democrats, lose the next election? Are we going to see a reversal of like what happened to the Iran deal? Can anyone really trust long-term policy in the US? And this is something that's going to take a lot of work. What if Republicans come in and we know what they're going to do with taxes? They're going to slash them.
Yeah, this is the danger of a political short-termism, I think. So this is going to be quite an interesting thing to keep an eye on. But right now, we're about to head into some messages. And then up next, taking a look at the subject of women in politics with Janish Prakash Chako, director of Tindak Malaysia. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.